My name is Enrique Cardiel. I'm a resident of the International District. I've lived here since 1996, and I'm the director of the Health Equity Council. I've been working in public health since 2001, and I'm really happy to be here with you all. I'm excited.
Awesome. Thank you so much. We're going to kind of get into some getting to know you questions, if that's okay, and then maybe get into something a little bit more in depth with your work and your healthcare career and as a part of the community and all that great stuff. And you kind of already answered one of our first questions, which was just like, you know, can you tell us about yourself? If you have more information, that's always good. We're excited to get to know you.
Yeah, let's see. Well, before I worked in public health, I worked with young people. I was a family advocate for Parents for Behaviorally Different Children in the 90s. And before that, worked at LULAC Education Center, encouraging students to get a higher education. Yeah, I play music. I do different types of artwork with rope, with leather, drawing. Yeah, I play music. I'm a grandparent, a parent. Just really like to support young folks. So for a long time, after I left working in youth, people just still assumed I was working with young folks directly. But it's been a long time. And I have to say, you know, working with youth is fun. Kind of miss it.
Awesome. Well, we really appreciate you working with us today. and I hope it's okay if we ask, how long have you lived in Albuquerque or New Mexico?
Sure. Yeah, so I've lived in Albuquerque since August of 1987. I came here actually to go to ROTC at UNM. And then that didn't really work out. I stayed here. I liked Albuquerque. So I've been here that whole time. Haven't done the math on how many years that is lately.
I just wanted to ask, what exactly drew you to stay in Albuquerque?
Well, even though I got out of being in ROTC and in the Navy, I knew I wanted to finish college since I was, as far as I know, I was the first male in my family to go to college. So I felt kind of a responsibility to finish. And so I figured it'd be easier to do that if I just stayed put. You know, and then I met my partner and all of that.
I know you've, from our kind of basic amount of research that we were able to do, we saw that you have a pretty great career in healthcare, and we wanted to ask, like, what draws you to healthcare specifically?
Okay. Well, I don't work in healthcare. I work in public health.
Okay.
Healthcare does medicine, provides medical services. Public health tries to work with folks on a wide range of stuff from, you know, health education, but also things around environment and organizing community to, you know, if they have to fight for a cleaner environment or fight for different things. But we work a lot with folks who do medical service, and, you know, the Department of Health does do vaccinations and STD work and those kind of things. But it's really a little bit different in that we're, I don't have patients or anything like that. And my passion with it is just the reality of it's not emergency work in the same way of like somebody goes to the ER, you know, and they live or die based on what you do there. But it takes a lot longer and it's still life or death. You know, if we can clean up the environment, people will live longer. If we can get people paid sick leave, and better wages, they're less likely to die prematurely because of stress or other issues. So just really serving community in that way, I think, would be my passion.
Have you been in the ID since you've moved into into Albuquerque?
No, I moved when I first lived here in 87. I lived on the west side. And then in 88, I moved to the university area. And I lived there until 96. And then in 96, we moved here to the International District.
That's awesome. I was hoping that I could ask you throughout the years, what have you seen about the ID that has changed?
Well, when I first moved to the International District, you know, there was a lot more drug, open air kind of drug dealing. So, you know, there was a lot more conflicts that were out kind of in the streets, right? People were shooting at each other in the street in a much more intense way than happens now, even though people think it's terrible now. It's obviously still needs improvement, but it's really a lot better than it was back then. In the first maybe 8 years that we lived here, there was 5 homicides on my block, like specifically on my block. Not just like in the neighborhood, but like right here on my street. You know, and that's all really slowed down, you know, and it's far from perfect. And, you know, but the community is still a lot of hardworking people doing, you know, the best that they can. And really, I think that's the thing is there's people who are trying to put roots here, right? This is not an old historical community. You know, there are folks who've lived here since San Mateo was the edge of town back in, I think, the 50s. But people like us who've, you know, we've been here 20-something years now and not planning to move and just trying to do our best to make this a tighter and more solid community.
Thank you so much.
You mentioned the community and stuff like that, and I kind of wanted to know, what does your community engagements look like?
It depends what exactly I'm working on. For the most part, what it looks like is just trying to build relationships with neighbors and also help neighbors kind of build on their skills. There's a lot of skills already in the neighborhood, and people assume like we got to come in and we have to train people and have to do, you know, all these things to get people up to speed. People here have a lot of skills already. It's just helping people see how those skills can work for them and their families. I've gone door to door with people and, you know, I remember going door to door and asking somebody like, do you want to participate in this community garden? You know, and the gentleman looked at us. He's like, you know, I left home so that I could stop farming. He's like, I don't need a class to, you know, about farming or about growing food. You know, so we could go in with an assumption of like, oh, we're here to teach you how to grow food, instead of like, oh, do you know how to do any of these things? And do you want to share? So as much as I can, I try to do those kind of things. For a while, we were going around when we would flyer for events and just look for like who's already growing food and try to connect with them and ask them if they wanted to teach their neighbors how to plant, you know, and we're still kind of doing that, right? So there's a small group of us now who are growing food in our front yards so that people can share and, you know, just trying to reach out to folks and make that into a network. So it's more conscious and not just kind of like accidental and random, just kind of reinforce it as much as we can.
I like really want to be a part of that now.
You can just let me know.
Okay, I definitely will. Thank you so much. I guess kind of jumping off of that, I wanted to know, how do you see yourself or where do you see yourself as a part of the community? Just not only as somebody who works with public health, right? But also just a person who lives in the ID.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just another neighbor, you know. I have a lot of privilege compared to a lot of folks. You know, I have a master's degree and a fairly secure job, and a lot of other people don't have that. You know, but at the end of the day, I'm just another neighbor, right? I try to have conversations with folks about why I think we can try to help each other out, how we can help each other out. But, you know, I don't have authority to force people to participate in anything or do anything, you know, and I don't really want that kind of position anyway. But just trying to get people together, you know, I think both good and bad, you know, the work I've done, you know, over the last 20 years has been part of what brought some attention to the neighborhood, you know. And so the good thing is, you know, sometimes we get funding and support for projects and things like that, or lighting or parks or those kind of things. And on the downside is sometimes we get funding and support and, you know, that causes problems with people, right? Like who got paid and who didn't get paid. And once you have funding, then somebody else controls what the goals are and those kind of things. So I think it's really, you know, just something to try to be aware of, right? I'm just aware that I'm a neighbor that has more access to institutions than most folks do. And so just trying to be, yeah, aware of that and respectful of that and, you know, try to keep myself in check with that.
Awesome. Thank you. It was really great to look at all of the different community projects that we had seen while we were doing our research, two of which that I think really stood out to me were your help with like the needle cleanup in the International District, but also the larger pathways for biking and walking and that sort of thing. I was hoping to ask if there was a specific project that feels like especially rewarding to you.
Or a specific project that was very memorable for any reason that you feel it was memorable.
Or even is there one that you feel like really affected the community in a really positive way more than a different one?
I think the one of the projects that got the most attention was the syringe pickup project. And that had several, you know, dynamics components to it. One was we weren't trying to take care of people with substance misuse disorder or anything like that. We weren't trying to fix that. It was just that people felt like it's not safe to go to the park. It's not safe to go, you know, have the kids play in the alleys or any of that because there's syringes around. And so I'd been to lots of meetings where people were asking the city, like, when are you going to clean up the syringes? When are you going to clean up the syringes? And so the good habit I have, I believe, is to ask, well, what can we do about that? It's our neighborhood. Just finally pushed the question back and saying, well, what if we learned how to pick up the syringes safely and we did it ourselves? And there was a few people that were interested in that, so enough to go forward. So we did. We found out from the city before we started picking up syringes. It took a while to get the training. And the training really is only like 5 minutes. So it's amazing to me how hard it was to get it. But once we got it, you know, it was easy to like train other people, move forward and all of that. But, you know, the important part was how much community bought into that and participated in that. And so there were people who were like, well, you're just empowering and encouraging people to keep using IV drugs. I'm like, I have pretty clear that nothing I do impacts whether somebody's going to, you know, use a substance that they have a dependency on, right? And I don't think me going out is going to just make people think, oh, wow, that's so cool. I'm going to start using IV drugs. So I really thought that was like a really weak counter argument. But, you know, we were clear. It's like, this is an environmental health project. We want to make the environment in the neighborhood better. As far as I can remember, every single time we went out, somebody stopped and thanked us, whether it was somebody that appeared to be unhoused, or people driving by, like we almost caused a wreck once. This person stopped their truck on Zuni, you know, to make sure that we heard them say thank you. We're like, keep going. The people behind you are going to run into you. And, you know, and that cut news coverage and all of that. But I think really, and there's still people now that still do syringe pickups, right? The Health Equity Council still does. Some people from Bernalillo County still do. So I think there's, and now that we're heading hopefully to the end of the pandemic, right, we'll be able to get more people out in groups to do those trainings and continue that work. But at the time, the city estimated that it cost them $70 per syringe to go out and pick them up, right? Because the only people that were allowed to pick up syringes were paramedics, you know, or firefighters. So the whole truck would have to go out, right, to pick up syringes. And not to give them a hard time, but they would go and pick up the syringe that somebody said was a problem, right? And we would go and like scour the park or scour the alleyways. So there were times where in an hour and a half, we'd pick up like 500 syringes if we had a big enough crew and covered, you know, the right type of areas. You know, and so before I changed the Health Equity Council, we were tracking like how many syringes did we pick up. And I think when I left, we were at like $45,000 worth of syringes. And we always joke like we should send the city a bill so that we could use that money to keep the work going. But we've also done a lighting project called Light the District, where we put in solar power lights on wooden poles on private property and help make it safe for pedestrians. And so, you know, it's part of the walking and biking stuff, but it's the stuff that doesn't get as much support, you know, because it's not government and it's not like an intersection light and those kind of things. But yeah, I think it's been 4 years, my house, because I don't like to ask people to do stuff I don't want to do, I wouldn't do. So like, the first one was at my house, and then we've put in, I think, well over 20 in that time. But just recently in the last year, like the neighbor directly north and the neighbor directly south both got a light. So now we have like three houses in a row that have these solar power lights. You know, and for a while I was thinking, well, maybe this is not a good idea. But I think sometimes it just takes a while for people to get interested. And then, you know, yeah, there's lots of different related projects. We've done safety walks and where we'd go on different streets and through different intersections and kind of rate their safety and show neighbors like how to tell, is this a good sidewalk? Is this a good intersection? Point out the issues like lighting. Is there a crosswalk here? All of those things. And really the important thing is not anything that I've done, because I don't do anything by myself. You know, the important thing has been the stuff that the community has done, right, as a whole. So, you know, the syringe pickup stuff really got news because we were getting people to volunteer their time to go and pick up syringes. You know, the fact that whatever I got interviewed or, you know, that I was the one kind of calling people together, that's really not as important as the fact that community people wanted to do it and they really showed up. They turned up for it, you know. The same for the lights. For a while, we'd put up a light and we'd have like a party at the house. You know, we'd have cookies and fruits and juice and water, you know, and we'd put up a table and just talk to people about like the lighting. How do they feel about the lighting? And yeah, and so then other neighbors would be like, oh yeah, you know, can we get a light? Yeah, the difficulty was like if you're renting, you know, you have to get the landlord's permission. So there was a few times where someone would want a light, but the landlord wasn't on board, you know, and so we just had to keep trying to pitch it to the landlord. But, you know, it was just one of those things that, you know, if the community didn't buy into it, it wouldn't have mattered. It wouldn't have been important. You know, so I think at the end of the day, you know, you're interviewing me, but there's really tons of people who were involved in all of these things.
Really quick, just to kind of comment on what you had said about the needle cleanup community effort. I read the article that I found, I think it was from the Albuquerque Journal, but we are currently working on site at Mesa Verde for Harwood. And we have one of our lead artists had mentioned 5 years ago, it was like a field of needles. And I looked multiple different places in that park, and I couldn't find one single needle. And I just wanted to commend kind of the whole community for really banding together and cleaning and getting the ability to clean that up.
Yeah. I mean, I think, again, yeah, it was a big community effort, right? We trained a ton of folks, community folks. We also trained government folks. So it was interesting. Like, I was trained by both Bernalillo County and the city. And IDHCC hosted a training by the city. But as things worked out, we ended up training city and county staff on how to do syringe pickups, you know. So it's just kind of this weird thing where, like, they just weren't training a lot of folks at the time. I think now it's just normal. And I'll say, honestly, a lot of people exaggerate when they say there's fields of syringes. You know, I've seen news stories talk about, like, oh, there's 1,000 syringes in this parking lot. And I'm like, I've cleaned a lot of parking lots. I've never seen a parking lot with 1,000 syringes. You know, so I'd go look at the place. And, you know, it's hard after the news story, right? Because then somebody's gone and cleaned it up. But I would check those places kind of regularly for a while. And yeah, there's very few literal fields of syringes. There is one place, it was an abandoned house that I think was the closest to actually, you know, in one backyard, I think we picked up 300 syringes. So that was the closest to, you know, the field of syringes everywhere thing. But yeah, it was amazing, like, how much, you know, again, like, there was people who were like, you shouldn't be training folks to do that. And then folks who were like, sign me up. But yeah, and we'll be kind of ramping that back up again here in the next couple months.
How has COVID and the pandemic really affected the community, or has it really affected the community? I feel like it affected everybody.
Yeah, I think COVID, there's no way to get around that COVID impacted everybody. I think the thing to ask is, like, depending who you're talking to, is like, how did it impact you? You know, for me, it just made more work. Working from Zoom actually means we go to more meetings, right? Because this meeting could end right at 5 and there's no, like, downtime, you know, to drive to the next meeting. You just log off and log back on. I think my record is 8 meetings and 12 hours worth in one day. And I've made the mistake of trying to be on 2 meetings at one time. That's just not worth it. It just fried my brain real fast. But I'm also privileged that I got to work. I got to work from home a lot, not 100%, but much more than most folks. You know, there's immigrant and refugee communities who weren't getting information in their language or weren't getting good information in their language. So they were like, no one wanted to talk about them then. I don't know if we're supposed to talk about them now, but I will. I'll get in trouble. It's all right. You know, there was little outbreaks in parts of the community, right? Either racial, ethnic community or just like physical area for a variety of reasons, right? People have a bunch of people living together, right? More than just a couple of people living in one residence. And then people have to go to work. So somebody gets sick, they come home and there's nowhere to go. So a lot of people get sick. People who, again, didn't get the right information or the information in their language. So somebody gets sick. And then, you know, there was cultural issues around the treatment, about talking about it, all of those things. And so there was parts of the communities that just got really hit hard. You know, a lot of people got laid off or just had to go to work. And, you know, people that worked grocery stores and retail and things like that, that if their place didn't close down, they just kept going. And so, you know, it hit the community in lots of different ways. So I think a lot of businesses kind of boarded up for a little bit, but looking around now, you know, a lot of businesses are working at getting back on their going and getting back in their kind of flow. And I think, again, that just speaks to the amazing capacity of people in this community to try to figure out, like, all right, well, we got hit hard this way, and like, how do we do stuff? Some of us formed like committees, I guess, for lack of a better term, to if we found out somebody was sick, like we would take them soup and other supplies, right? And just kind of try to, you know, leave it on the front door and just try to help folks that couldn't go shopping or were sick, you know, to be able to get stuff. Luckily, there is this effort called Albuquerque Mutual Aid. And that really just helped lots of folks. It helped folks who needed the support. It also helped folks who were laid off or just working less to have something to do and support other community members. And I think that was really a big key. And I hope that the mutual aid effort continues, you know, beyond the pandemic. I think it's definitely important. And it just shows, right? There were several times, you know, during the pandemic where, you know, you can say good or bad or whatever, that government just wasn't moving fast enough for what people needed, you know, or food pantries were getting cleaned out. And, you know, the mutual aid networks were keeping people fed and keeping people activated and participating in the community. You know, I knew somebody at the beginning who would go out every 2 weeks, go shopping, take food to like 3 or 4 different people, and then just quarantine for 2 weeks and then go do it again. You know, I'm like, that's just amazing that they'd be willing to do that for other folks.
That was really insightful. Thank you so much for letting us know how the pandemic kind of affected you and the community. I think that everybody was affected in a ton of different ways. So it was really nice to see some more insight. But now that we are just kind of coming out of the pandemic and it's getting safer to go out, are you seeing more community engagement or even just neighbors wanting to talk to each other more?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's more engagement just in the fact that there's more stuff going on and more people kind of pulling things together. Obviously, there's a lot more social gathering than there was 6 months ago. But also, people just doing events. Like I said, we're going to start ramping up our syringe pickup trainings again. We do other like health education stuff that we learn how to do by Zoom. And people really disliked that at the beginning. And people still dislike Zoom. But also we've learned things like some of our trainings have gone statewide because we can do Zoom, right? And we weren't doing that before. It was in person only. So we'll be learning how to do both, right? But we'll begin to have things again in person. And so there are some events that were canceled that people are talking about, you know, annual events that were canceled, you know, for the summer, that people are thinking, well, can we pull off a small version, you know, this year, just so that it still exists. And I'm pretty sure people are going to figure that out. And I think that will kind of pump some life into it. And we also specifically, like for the Health Equity Council, for us, this was a good time to reflect on like, what do we want to do for community engagement? And how do we want that to look like? And we had just kind of been on autopilot, right? People just kind of like, you hand out flyers or you send out emails. And now we're like, okay, how do we want to go forward with that? How do we want to build what we have and make it better? And I think, not everybody, but I think for a lot of folks, this was an opportunity to think about how to change things, how to make things different. Yeah, for us, it was like, how do we do it better? How do we do it deeper, right? How do we engage folks in a much deeper way? So I think there's going to definitely be a lot of different types of engagement going on going forward, you know, and some people are just going to try to go back to what they were doing 15 months ago. And that's fine. But for us, it was an opportunity to really think of, like, we want to be more intentional. We want to be more strategic. We want to be check ourselves to make sure we're following the community more, not just assuming, you know, we talked to two people, so we know what the rest of the 60,000 people in the neighborhood know, want to know.
That's awesome. And you mentioned them like twice now, but I wanted to ask, what exactly is the Health Equity Council? Could you maybe tell us a little bit more?
Yeah, so the state started maternal and child wellness councils for each county, and I believe six of the Native nations in the state or Native communities. And in the early 2000s, that was changed to county health councils. And then in 2008, I believe Governor Richardson stopped the funding for that. And so some health councils are totally volunteer now, and other councils are picked up by their state, or I mean the county government that where they're housed at. So we were under Bernalillo County government until 2015. And then the county decided to stop funding the health council. And so at that time we were called the Bernalillo County Community Health Council. And we're now in the process of legally changing our name to Health Equity Council. But yeah, we're a nonprofit that is trying to be a place, a trusted place where people can come for like health information, health policy information, and also a place where community can feel like they are part of advocating for their own health, right? There's a little mental trap where we can say, we're here to advocate for community. We do that, but we want to get to the point where we're working with the community so that community is advocating for its own health. And that's part of the thing, right? The growth that we want to do now that we've gone through this period of having the opportunity to think things through in a different way and to think, you know, we were forced to slow down and that gave us time to think about these things that we knew in a lot of ways, but now can really, you know, go deeper with it.
Well, that's great. I kind of wanted to know what exactly your role at the HEC was. What exactly do you do there and so on and so forth?
Sure. Yeah, I'm the director of the Health Equity Council. So I don't know if I avoided or stayed away from director type jobs until this one. But I liked, you know, being the person that went out going door to door. Then I had some back problems and it was hard to go door to door. You know, but that was still being on the community is still like what I enjoy the most. And the director position came open and I had been one of those folks who has said throughout the years that the public health leadership doesn't look like the community exactly. And so I was like, well, then I guess I should step up and apply for this job. And so I did, and they hired me for better or worse. They have me now. And and the council's always been about health equity. We just had the opportunity to make it very clear that that was the goal.
Well, that's awesome to hear. Yeah, when we were doing our research beforehand, like I had found the HEC website and I was very intrigued. since I didn't really know what it was and I wanted to ask you about that. So yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and I found out we have a bunch of broken links, so hopefully we're fixing those.
Yeah, there were a few broken links, so I think that's where my confusion mainly came from.
Yeah, we just changed the website in May, I think.
Oh, so just barely last month, yeah.
Yeah, so we're in the process of double checking and all of that stuff.
Well, all of the work that you're doing and that you're doing with the community sounds really great. And it's honestly kind of very inspiring, especially considering the last year that we've been, everyone's stuck inside, not as much community engagement. At least on my own end, I haven't engaged at all with any of my communities.
Yeah, it's been very tough.
That's part of the reason, I think, why, and correct me if I'm wrong, but like the both of us are so excited to be working with a group of our peers right now at Harwood, but also improving just like Bernalillo County in general. I grew up here. I believe Michelle also grew up here. So it's really great to be kind of a part of that process.
Well, cool. If there's any way that the council can be of support to what you're doing, please let us know. If you want to spend time and learn about public health more, let us know. We'll figure out supporting that. It's really, if we can't do that, then we're not, you know, we got space to grow.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. I know for a fact that we'll probably definitely stay in contact as we move forward with this project as well.
Yeah, yeah. And Michelle has my number. Lauren, if you need my number, get my number. Email is the worst way to get a hold of me. So, yeah, if you need me, text me.
Okay.
Do you have any questions for us? Anything that you're curious about? Anything that maybe we can answer for you?
Well, I think, yeah, just what do you think this information, what use is this information to you? Right? Is this helping you with where you were wanting to go?
I guess I'll go first because, I mean, I was super intrigued and interested in especially the lighting. Like, I don't live anywhere near the International District, but for me, it's always been so important for there to be lighting, especially in public places. So just hearing about how you and the community went around and asked and like had those walks and to talk to people about lighting. Is the sidewalk safe? Is this a public, like a safe place for public to walk by and to be here in general? Like that's really actually very important for me. That actually like hit home very hard for me. And for this project that we're doing with Harwood, I think just having that know-how that people are interested in this, it's not just one person, it's the whole community that like went to participate in these walks and went to go learn about these things and figure out if their sidewalks were safe or public, not public, private property, like having that lighting in their area. Like that's so interesting to me. And that's so, I find that very inspiring actually.
Oh, good. We hope that that's the best way to engage folks is, you know, to inspire folks to do something, you know. And yeah, so Bernadette Hardy really was like the lead on the Light the District project. Reina Juarez, you know, was a big part of IDHC. She's, well, they both still are. They're the co-facilitators. At this point, Bridget Yanez did a lot of the yard and garden stuff. She does a project called Sunflowers for Change, looking at cleaning up toxic stuff with plants. You know, and so that naturally leads into all the food growing stuff. There's a Hawklight, which is a hand activated walking crossing or walking something on Central in Texas. I think it's been 8 years that we've been pushing for that light to be put in there. You know, so that's the other part, is just like how long some of this stuff takes. You know, it's just, it takes forever. As a resident, I'm not going anywhere. You know that. Here comes the plane. As director of the Health Equity Council, what I want to learn and get better at as we come out of this pandemic is how to engage people across the county for this type of work. You know, and people will tell us what they want, and hopefully we'll be able to listen, you know, and do that. You know, the light, the district, we were talking about lighting as an issue in a conference, I think in South Carolina. And one of the people sitting at the table was from Ohio. And they said, we're doing this project where we put up these lights with, you know, these poles with solar lights on them. And we're going to light, make a trail and light the neighborhood and this and that. We're in a black community in our town, and we're not expecting the city to come to do all this lighting. So we're like, you know, they had pictures. She had pictures of the poles and everything on her phone. I asked her if she'd send them to me and if it was okay to share. And we did. And like, I started texting people, you know, from the table right there where we were at lunch. And by the end of lunch, we had like four people who were like, yeah, let's put up lights. And then we went on a trip to go visit them. And we found out they didn't put up any lights because they started working with the city, because they wanted to put lights through this park. And because they started working with the city, everything got hung up in red tape. So 4 years later, they had zero lights, you know, and we were up, you know, we were showing them pictures of lights actually installed. So it's just a good lesson learned. And we learned a lot on that trip and stuff that inspired us to do other things here and just keep going. You know, there's cooperative work going on. You know, Bernadette and Raina really worked hard and did food distributions, right? Because all the like other normal things couldn't happen. So they figured out doing food distributions and all of that. So there's just lots of projects like that that are just there, right? You know, that we just could keep going on and on about for a while. So hopefully I will see you in person someday.
That would be great.
Not too far away, and we can talk about projects and stuff in your neighborhood. Because I think it'd be awesome if you came and spent some energy in the International District. That's cool. But I think it'd be even better if you took some of that energy and like put it in your own neighborhood. And if there's anything I can share, you know, I figure I'm not doing my job if I'm not helping people be ready to take over my job someday. So, you know, if there's something I can share that's useful, please make me share it.
Thank you so much. I feel like I could send you so many, not emails, but we'll definitely keep in touch, and hopefully we'll see you soon in person. And just thank you so much for giving us a good chunk of your time today. I feel like we had a really great conversation, and it was really just really awesome to be even more informed from your point of view.
Yeah. And I know you were interviewing me, but I hope to be able to listen to you for a long time sometime.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And thank you again. Just sorry. I'm going to just keep saying thank you, Michelle.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Enrique. And thank you, Lauren, for also being here. If anything comes up, we'll definitely make sure to get in contact with you again. I would love to continue having conversations about community engagement and building up the community and such. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm just, before we go, so like part of the front yard gardening stuff. And there's our light.
Oh, that's awesome. One,
another neighbor's light. The other neighbor's light there. But yeah. Look forward to meeting you in person. And, you know, if any of this stuff is interesting working with you, and I'll be around for a while, I'm assuming. So feel free to let me know if there's a way I can be of support.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Awesome. Well, I think that is all of our questions. And it is also 5 o'clock, and we don't want to keep you too long. But we'll definitely be in touch, and we will probably have even more to talk about next time.
Awesome. That's great. Yeah. Well, I'm all vaccinated up, so I'm comfortable meeting in person whenever that makes sense to y'all.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Enrique.
Sure. Thank you.